With the start of the new legislative session less than a month away, we're continuing to get to know some of the new faces who will be making up the ranks of the legislature, and that includes some members who are filling vacated seats and have already been sworn in as assembly members. And that includes newly minted Assemblymember Kenny Burgos, a Bronx Democrat who is taking office at the ripe old age of 26. So, Assemblyman, I think the obvious question to start with is, why did it take you so long to get elected?
Well, Dave, I grew up in this community. I was born on Watson Avenue. I've lived in, you know, various places throughout the Bronx, but I was born here. I have family here, friends for so long. So many of my memories are here. And I was lucky enough after college to begin a career in government representing that for a member who represented this area. So I got a firsthand knowledge, you know, of stakeholders, of, you know, the impact local government has in our area. Although I am young, I guess, at 26, right, I believe I have 26 years of experience for this district. So it has taken me a long time, I guess, to arise to this position in that regard.
Well, when you contemplated running for office, how did your age factor into the decision-making process? For instance, did any part of you question whether you were ready to make the leap?
I mean, certainly. You know, I mean, I'm someone, you know, like most people who can sometimes struggle from imposter syndrome. And it can feel like, you know, am I the right person for this job? Should I be older? Should I have, you know, more quote-unquote experience? But really through the campaign, it was actually a much different reception than I expected. You know, many people were excited, one, to have a youthful voice. People were, you know, happy to see a young person so heavily engaged, you know, in local politics and local issues that we deal with. And then, you know, couple that with already the experience that I had and the knowledge that I had to fix some of these issues, people were very receptive. And so, you know, it was warming for me to see that, and I was happy to see that people were enthused to have me run.
How does the imposter syndrome manifest itself sometimes in your life?
I mean, like anyone, it just sometimes you second guess yourself. I'm a firm believer that we are our own worst enemy. So, you know, I actively try to fight against that. And, you know, people have doubts. It's human nature. But again, as long as you push that to the side, you know, you know what's right. You take in stride what you know and what you want to do. And ultimately, you should come out on top.
Growing up in the Bronx and living there today, I'm curious, how did attending college at the University of Albany inform your thinking about the whole vast section of the state north of the Bronx?
Yeah, so I mean, that's actually where my interest was first piqued. I was elected to the local student government in Albany. I was a senator of business and management, and my roommate in college was actually the president of the student body. So that experience really, you know, obviously taught me how government can work in a college setting. But then being in the state capitol, we did have interactions, right, with events that went on with the legislators in Albany. I began to take a deeper look, kind of, you know, what was going on in the legislature, how it affected, you know, my family, my friends back home in the Bronx. And then, like I said, then from there is when I began my internship at the council during college. And here we are a few years later.
While you're at Albany, though, did you, I mean, experience any of the surrounding community and experience any sort of culture shock in Albany, or was it pretty unremarkable?
You're speaking to just actual Albany local residents in the local area, or
sure, whatever you experience while living here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure like any college setting, you know, college students can be sometimes insulated from the outside world.
That's fair.
Depending on what college town they're in. So, you know, I mean, I had amazing experiences with young people my age who were, you know, trying to get a degree and educate themselves and everything else that comes along with college. So, I mean, I guess the culture shock was to kind of see the surrounding area of Albany. Sometimes, you know, there's crime rate that's pretty high. You know, there's poverty certainly surrounding the area, and it's tough to see that sometimes, when especially Albany being the capital of New York, such a wealthy state. And to have such a big college town, obviously, right there within it, that the local kind of economy and people are struggling. So I guess that was a bit of a culture shock to see.
You tweeted in November that once a week you, quote, dive into the black hole of right-wing media just to see what's going on over there. And so I was curious if that's actually true and whether, more broadly, you do seek out alternative points of view to guide your own way of thinking.
Yeah, No, it's absolutely true. I'm a firm believer that, you know, we should listen to everyone. You know, I think there's something to learn from everyone. It's dangerous to live in an information vacuum from any angle. I do believe the way our legislators are pushing for, you know, our government to work now is in fact the right way to do things. But we can't ignore other people and their opinions. You know, sometimes these folks are our constituents, and it's important to just kind of see what the other side of that argument is, just so you have clarity in how you make decisions and legislate.
Has that process ever actually informed your way of thinking, or has it really done the opposite and reinforced maybe that you were already felt like you were right about what you believed initially?
Yeah, I try to go in there with an open mind, but unfortunately, I can say that nothing has really swayed my mind. It's really more just a perspective thing. A lot of the time, it's just confirmation that there's a lot of misinformation in right-wing media, unfortunately. But again, it's really just a perspective thing. It's nothing that has ever shaped me to, you know, lean that way.
We're speaking with Assemblymember Kenny Burgos, a Bronx Democrat who was just elected in November but has already taken office as a result of filling a vacant seat. In 2021, you're going to be part of a Democratic supermajority in the Assembly, and there will be a Democratic supermajority in the Senate too, meaning the legislature has enough votes to advance an agenda without buy-in from the governor since they can override any potential veto. How should lawmakers flex those muscles in the, say, first month of the legislative session?
I believe those muscles should be flexed so long as it's helping the people of New York that are most in need. I believe that's what we were elected to do. That's what our main focus is in this moment, and nothing can stand in the way of that. So, you know, us being the legislature, you know, the individuals who are tasked with legislating and making sure we represent our constituency and the people of New York, again, nothing can stand in the way of us, you know, really providing that relief and that support that people are needing right now. It's a tough time. COVID has ravaged the state, the city, and even more specifically the Bronx and my district. So I believe the legislature has to flex that muscle if the need arises.
Well, for example, marijuana legalization is an issue where the legislature agrees philosophically with the governor, but there are details holding things up. Should the legislature in January just give up negotiations and just pass their existing bill that Democratic lawmakers support and let the governor either take it or leave it and then veto and override a veto if it comes to that?
Well, again, I mean, so we do have, I think the number is about 40 total new legislators between the Senate and the Assembly. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure there'll be new discussions on, you know, how that bill is worded and how we actually roll out marijuana legalization. But if in fact, you know, we decide that that bill, as it remains, should be pushed forward, or if we make some amendments, then yes, that's how we should move forward. Again, we are representative of the people throughout New York State. And being so and producing that bill, then we should be able to move forward with what we see fit.
Who was your first choice for president during the Democratic presidential primaries?
During the primary, I was a Bernie supporter. That was my main pick. I even voted for him in New York, even though by the time our primary came around, he was no longer running a campaign. But I felt it was important to still cast that vote for Bernie to show the kind of support for certain policies that Bernie had here in New York. And I think it's been effective, especially now with Joe Biden being the, you know, president-elect. He's taken that into account. He's taken into account, you know, the younger generation, the more progressive left-wing part of our party that wants to see these kind of changes. We want to see Medicare for all. You know, we want to see a cancellation of student debt. We believe housing is human rights. So I voted for Bernie in the June primary.
Your predecessor, Assemblyman Marcus Crespo, abruptly gave up his seat at the end of June. Do you think that was fair to the people of the 85th Assembly District?
You know, it's been a tough year for politics. And while my predecessor's decision to leave early can certainly be viewed one way or another, I know he's served the people amazingly here. He's loved. He's always made sure resources were brought here. And I commend him for the work he's done. I know it's not favorable for someone to leave in the middle of a term, but I know things can be complex when making these decisions, you know, life, family matters. So I do commend him with at least doing the work he's done. He's been a great mentor to me in terms of this transition and has been very open and helpful for my staff and my team to get on board. So I thank him for that. So it was only a small gap, but I do believe we always need representation. And I was here throughout the campaign, basically representing my people until I was formally elected.
You pledged to establish a minimum salary of $40,000 for staff in your office. How has that affected your ability to actually staff up your office? Has it presented complications?
Well, so far we've been in operation. I've hired so far a team of three. And, you know, my minimum salary floor, I think, is something that's important. Again, I stand very strong workers' rights. You know, as someone who was a staffer in local government, I understand firsthand how sometimes staffers can be severely underpaid and overworked, you know, just completely burned out. So in terms of my office, while we only have a small team of three, you know, the assembly budget is pretty small in comparison to other government offices. We've been doing pretty good. I believe when you pay someone an adequate salary, one, they feel more valued and more inclined to do just exceptional work. And two, it's just the right thing to do. You know, New York City is an expensive place to live, and we can't expect to have staffers here working in our government that then need to rely on government assistance. It's just hypocritical. I wish I could have an even higher salary floor, to be quite honest. But right now I'm limited to the budget that I have. And as we go through the motions, maybe I can increase it more.
What do you think of Governor Andrew Cuomo?
I think the governor has, you know, been a solid leader and a calming voice, at least within this pandemic. You know, he's been loved throughout the nation for his conferences and his briefings. But certainly there's always room to be better, and he could have done better, right? So I believe, you know, we could have shut down our state much earlier. I think there were issues, you know, in how we handled nursing homes. And I think the governor, unfortunately, often waits too long for advocates and more progressive legislators to push agendas before he gets on board. So I believe he needs to listen to us a lot more, especially now in this moment, and what we're saying and what we want done. And I believe there's that much room for that improvement.
Did you vote for him in his 2018 gubernatorial primary?
I did.
What was the reason for that as opposed to Cynthia Nixon?
Well, at the time, I mean, I believe, you know, it was a different situation we had in terms of, you know, the legislature makeup, the Senate, and just where we were in New York. So at that moment, I do believe, you know, the executive branch to be a position where someone needs to have some real experience. I mean, managing New York State is no small task. So someone with a steady hand and someone who knows the job, I believe, is important. I believe he had a track record in comparison to Ms. Nixon. And at the time, I thought he was the best pick.
And now they're both Emmy winners. Well, we've been speaking with Assemblymember Kenny Burgos. He's a Bronx Democrat who was just elected in November and has taken office after filling a vacant seat. Assemblymember, thank you so much for making the time, and I look forward to seeing you in Albany when you come up here.
Thanks so much, Dave.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.